Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, May 23rd, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe returns home from a week-long medical checkup in Singapore, leading to renewed questions about the 90-year-old leader's health.
Zimbabweans, they have to be talking about the health issues of the president, primarily because he was, the Zambia viewed him as their preferred candidate, arguing that he was a visionary leader.
Some political commentators say efforts by the MDC's panel of elders to bring warring factions together look remote as individuals, especially in the Tsvangirai camp, are eyeing positions at the party's November Congress.
We should be aware that a lot has happened. A lot of insults have been thrown from the two factions. Party secrets have been exposed to the public. It will be very difficult now to actually mend the cracks.
And a senior World Bank official says Zimbabwe can unlock its full potential only if President Robert Mugabe and his government remove policy inconsistencies and contradictions.
President Robert Mugabe returned home from a medical checkup in Singapore today after spending a week in the Southeastern Asian state, leading to renewed questions about the health of the 90-year-old leader who has no obvious successor. But Mr. Mugabe, who has dispelled rumors that he is not feeling well, is expected to fly to South Africa tomorrow to attend South African President Jacob Zuma's inauguration. More than 30 heads of state and government are expected to attend Mr. Zuma's inauguration in Pretoria. South Africa remains Zimbabwe's leading trading partner, though the balance favors Pretoria. Political scientist Sekhswe Hamauswa of the Mulungushi University in Zambia tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Zimbabweans have the right to talk about their leader's health.
Zimbabweans, they should be talking about they have to be talking about the health issues of the president, primarily because he was, the Zambia viewed him as their preferred candidate, arguing that he was a visionary leader, and they think he has what it requires to revive the economy, according to the Zambia. So as a leader, it means they had found him only to be the leader of this country. Then if now the president's health is deteriorating, it will therefore affect the president's capability to be delivering what he is supposed to be delivering. So most of the time, if we calculate the hours of absenteeism from office, it will also lead maybe to some quarter of a year whereby the president is not in the office. And there are some cases, I would suppose, whereby the president will not be in the office, but while he's in Zimbabwe because of failing health conditions, that one is also a major concern. The major concern also arises from the manner or the nature in which the presidential powers or the exercise of executive powers are structured in Zimbabwe. You would realize that in most cases, laws will not be signed if the president is out of the country. If the president is not in the office, the acting president will have limited room to sign laws and to do other functions that the president himself can do. So in such an environment now, it seems when the president is out, the whole government will come to a halt, the government work. Therefore, the issue of the health is actually a major concern.
We also understand the president will be leaving for South Africa tomorrow for President Zuma's inauguration. How significant is this?
It's significant in the sense that Mugabe can take the time also to do the diplomatic initiatives. We are not expecting much, but it all depends on also who is going to be invited. there might be some sideline meetings that can be taking place where the president can also take opportunity.
That was political scientist Shakespeare Hamauswa of Mulungushi University in Zambia speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
While MDCT supporters are hailing efforts by the party's Guardian Council to bring the warring factions together, some political commentators say the panel's chances look remote. One such political commentator is Mlamuli Nkomo, who says individuals, especially in the Tsvangirai camp, who are eyeing positions at the November Congress, are the biggest threat to unity.
I'm not so sure whether they are going to achieve much in their efforts to bring unity between the two factions. We should be aware that a lot has happened. A lot of insults have been thrown from the two factions. Party secrets have been exposed to the public. It will be very difficult now to actually mend the cracks without the other faction thinking that the other is taking advantage. So what I'm saying is that a lot has happened, and maybe these chances of unity, they are coming a little bit too late, especially in light of the announcement by the Tsvangirai faction that they intend to hold a Congress in October. Since this other faction is intending to hold a Congress in October, I am quite positive that some elements or some individuals are already positioning themselves to occupy the important positions of Secretary General, the important positions of finance, which are being held by the rival faction. So efforts to unite the factions are commendable, but I think they are coming very, very late.
That was political commentator Mlamuli Nkomo in South Africa. Nkomo's sentiments were echoed by another political observer, Brilliant Mhlanga, a media lecturer in London.
To start with, we should acknowledge that what the panel of elders is trying to do is generally a good effort, you know, trying to bring people that or parties that are warring together. However, the chances are very slim when you look at the very fact that what has been happening over the years in Zimbabwe has been the canonization of Morgan Tsvangirai as a man who does not do anything wrong, to the extent that even in this instance, everyone sees him as the victim and Tendai Biti and others as the people who are actually doing everything wrong. So the starting point, I think, within political circles is one that has caused this mess and which will continue to cause this thing to escalate. So I don't see these people really succeeding in finally causing this, you know, this gap to be bridged and causing Tsvangirai and Tendai Biti to work together. The gulf seems to have widened and is likely to even continue to widen. So that's the problem. However, there is need for maybe their council of elders to try and, you know, bridge this gap by bringing these two parties together. But I don't see them succeeding anyway.
That was political analyst Brilliant Mhlanga speaking to Studio 7 from London.
A senior executive at the World Bank office in Zimbabwe, Dr. Sidwell Howe, says Zimbabwe will unlock between $5 and $15 billion in mining investments potentially by 2018, but only if President Robert Mugabe's government addresses regulatory issues, operational uncertainty, and infrastructure bottlenecks that are holding back growth in the society or in the sector. Howe made the remarks at the ongoing mining indaba in Victoria Falls. Government officials and investors are at the mining conference. Zimbabwe, with the world's second largest platinum reserves and vast deposits of other minerals such as gold, coal, nickel, and chrome, has cast its eyes on the mining sector for increased contribution to state revenues. But this is constraining mining companies, which have complained of high taxes, uncompetitive royalties, and other mining fees. Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute tells the Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Zimbabwe has a huge potential, but an audit of the country's minerals resources should be undertaken first.
Yeah, I think I agree with that sentiment. Of course, we may not agree on the figure. We may not actually know the figure in terms of potential. It could actually be more than $5 billion, because what we've not yet done is the country is to do a comprehensive geological survey to actually find out the total width, the total value of our mineral resources that are underground. So it could actually be more than that. It's to consider the riches of the minerals and the potential that we have.
He talked about the policy inconsistencies. Can you elaborate on this? What is worrying investors?
What is worrying investors are a number of issues. The first one is the risk of policy reversals, especially with respect to the way the economy is being managed. For example, when you talk about issues of current reforms, there's this fear that probably government could reintroduce the Zim dollar. Just a fear. Even though government has actually said that they are not going to do that. But there is that possibility that it could actually happen that government could reverse the multi-currency regime. And also there are uncertainties with respect to issues to do with indigenization and economic empowerment. There are also uncertainties to do with the political environment. The internecine conflict and squabbles within our political establishment actually does not give investors confidence. Our politicians are spending most of their time now doing issues of succession from both ZANU-PF and even NDC. So I think those are also things that affect the investor sentiment. And also, obviously, those factors affect the country risk profile, the country risk sector, and they actually increase the country risk sector, and that also affects the investment premium. So investors would not want to do business in a country where there's a high premium because it becomes more expensive to invest in that country. And obviously, also more importantly, the issue of infrastructure, especially the issue of energy. We are experiencing energy deficits. And energy, you know, is a key enabler in investment and business. So if there is no assurance that investors are assured of uninterrupted power supply, then they would not want to do business in that kind of environment. So there are a whole lot of issues, both political and then economic, and also issues to do with the environment, the infrastructure, and so on and so on.
That was economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute speaking there with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Meanwhile, observers say Zimbabwe needs urgent local investors to create investor confidence, boost local production, and put a stop to high import bills. They say clear economic policies can contain these issues, including low foreign direct investment and weak growth in key sectors. The observers, who include company executives and economists, say Zimbabwe should join the Rand Monetary Zone in order to enhance trade with the neighboring nations. They say deflation is likely to worsen if the government does not take urgent measures to adopt investor-friendly policies. One of the observers, Bulawayo businessman Bulisani Ncube, believes that the Zimbabwe economy will soon decline to the 2008 hyperinflationary levels if these measures are not adopted. He says all this can be spearheaded by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe.
The first thing which the governor has to look at immediately is the sustainability of the continued use of the US dollar as the medium of exchange in this country. Because I believe the multi-currency regime was a necessary evil in 2009 to stabilize the economy. But because generally speaking, we are a U.S. dollar economy. And because of the liquidity crunch, the U.S. dollar cannot be used to revive this economy. To me, it would make business sense and common sense for him to explore the possibility of the country joining the Rand Monetary Union.
Is that going to work, Mr. Ncube?
Probably that's the only way out on this particular quagmire which we face. My submission is based on the fact that, remember, we're using the U.S. dollar, not officially. And what is the U.S. dollar is making now is even making our exports expensive, even compared to imports from South Africa. So it is making, rendering the country uncompetitive in terms of exports when it dilutes the use of the U.S. dollar. I know most people will then have a serious problem because they believe we don't. But I believe going the Rand route, we have got a challenge as a country, of course, of failing to follow rules. Because joining the Rand Monetary Union means you should be able to follow in the rules strictly. In the as a country, we have, unfortunately, we seem to be having serious problems with following rules.
That was businessman Bulisani Ncube speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo.
The government has created an economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Social and Economic Transformation, ZEMASET, which it says will revive the economy through the use of local resources and foreign direct investment. The country has been failing to attract foreign investors due to its controversial Black Empowerment Program and several other social, economic, and political issues.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
African ministers meet in Harare to discuss African climate change.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
The International Criminal Court has sentenced former Congolese militia leader Germain Katanga to 12 years in prison for his part in a 2003 massacre. Katanga was found guilty in March of helping facilitate and organize a militia that murdered about 200 people in Bogoro village in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
Russian President Vladimir Putin today said Russia will respect the outcome of Sunday's presidential election in neighboring Ukraine. Speaking at an international economic forum in St. Petersburg, Mr. Putin insisted his government is working with those currently in power in Kyiv and will work with the new leadership resulting from the presidential vote there.
And a Chinese court has found a former mining tycoon guilty of murder and sentenced him to death. The People's Court in Central Hubei Province announced today that Li Yuan and his younger brother Li Wei were guilty of organizing and leading a 36-member mafia-style group which was responsible for the deaths of at least 8 people. The brothers and 34 other defendants were accused of crimes, including leading and participating in crimes and intentional homicide. The group is also thought to have fostered ties with businessmen and senior politicians in Sichuan.
A war between cotton producers and buyers is looming following the announcement by the Cotton Ginners Association that it will pay 65 cents for a kilogram of cotton, up from last year's price of 30 cents. This is said to have infuriated cotton farmers who were expecting a better offer. As a result, some are threatening to destroy their produce or hold on to their crop than sell at a price they say is too low. The Zimbabwe Farmers Union has weighed in, urging the buyers to raise the price to at least $1 per kilogram. Another farmers union, the Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union, is now threatening to take the government to court after a ruling by the Competition and Tariff Commission barring unions from negotiating cotton prices with the Cotton Ginners Association on behalf of their members. Studio 7 failed to reach the Cotton Ginners Association for comment, but former Chiredzi West lawmaker and Agriculture Committee member Moses Mare tells Studio 7 it's time for the government to intervene and rescue farmers from abuse by buyers.
The amount of money that is being offered by cotton buyers is far much less than the amount of input that people have put to produce the cotton that they are trying to sell to the cotton buyers. They can't even recover the amount that they put in place to produce the product. This is the problem that we are having in this country. The government is not helping at all, and the buyers are cheating the producers. And this problem must be solved as a matter of urgent. And the cotton producers are refusing to sell their product. Some are even keeping the cotton that they produced last year. And this problem must be alleviated as soon as possible with the government.
Is the government free to intervene in cases of price negotiation?
There is rampant corruption in our country. People are not a few individuals are benefiting from this exercise, where they are buying the products for far much less price than the amount of money that they've used to produce the cotton. So the few that are buying cotton are those that are enjoying the amount of money that they will store on the end user. But those that are growing the product are not benefiting at all. They can't even recover the money that they put as their input for the production of the cotton.
How best can this be addressed, Mr. Mare?
If our government was responsible, this was supposed to be solved as a matter of urgency. But we have an irresponsible government. They are just protecting the farmers. And the people who are suffering are the cotton producers. They are suffering because they can't even recover the amount of money that they have put. The fertilizer price is high, the pesticides are too expensive, and the government is reluctant, and they can't even provide cheaper input for the farmers.
That was former Chiredzi West member of House of Assembly and Agriculture Committee member Moses Mare on the line from Chiredzi with the Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
While an international agreement on climate change remains elusive, African nations are moving closer to a unified strategy. Africa has experienced more extreme weather events in recent years as global temperatures rise. VOA's Jordi Kapoa reports.
Dr. Joseph Mukabana says the continent is on the front lines of climate change. He says that has led to a draft version of what's called the Implementation Plan of the Integrated African Strategy on Meteorology.
Africa is the most vulnerable continent when it comes to climate change. Out of the 48 least developed countries, 33 are in Africa. So the priority in Africa is to adapt on climate change. You either adapt or die.
Mukabana is director of the Regional Office for Africa and Least Developed Countries of the World Meteorological Organization. He says climate events far from Africa are having an effect on the continent.
Ice in the polar regions are melting, so the sea rises up. And the small islands, of course, are in danger of submerging. And also the low-lying coastal zones are in problems. So it's estimated sometimes between 25 and 50 years, the low-lying coastal zones may be submerged and the inundation will cover areas that are now inhabited.
It's imperative, he says, to protect Africa's coastlines.
The land degradation at coastal zones also ensures that the coastal zone habitat is interfered with. For example, in some areas you have mangrove forests being cut, and yet mangrove forests were very good in conserving the environment at the coast. You have also the coral reefs being eroded, and yet the coral reef, if it is big enough, can form the first fence when tsunamis come, for example. So we are destroying the coastal zone, and that will impact on human beings also.
While rising seas pose one climate change-related problem, lack of rain in some regions poses another, frequent droughts.
We depend mostly on seasonal rains, which farmers use to plant food crops. And so with the droughts now, you don't have food, so you have famine, you have malnutrition. The pastures are not there, so you have communities quarreling over the pastures. Essentially, in countries, you have sometimes internal displacement because of drought. People looking for food, animals looking for pasture.
And ancient sources of fresh water may have little to offer today.
The glaciers on mountains like Mount Kilimanjaro are also disappearing very fast. And the rivers that were there, which were perennial, are now drying up.
And while some areas are drying up, others can get too wet from much heavier than normal rains.
So you have flood episodes, which are more frequent. And with the floods, of course, there is a destruction of life and also destruction of infrastructure, which happens very fast. So the economies are impacted that way.
To address the threat of climate change in Africa, the World Meteorological Organization and the African Union Commission called a meeting in Nairobi in 2010. Nearly 50 ministers from across the continent attended. The meeting led to the Nairobi Declaration. The document noted the increasing risks and threats to sustainable development associated with disasters. It went on to say that 90% of those disasters were due to or aggravated by meteorological or hydrological extreme events. The Nairobi Declaration also recognized that weather and climate information, services, and products are of key importance for supporting climate-sensitive social and economic development centers. Mukabana says another product of the 2010 meeting was the creation of the African Ministerial Conference on Meteorology, or AMCOMET.
AMCOMET was formed to be a high-level mechanism for development of meteorology and its application in Africa. So the ministers also demanded that an integrated African strategy on meteorology should be developed, and that was developed.
That strategy is a mix of modern technology and scientific data and traditional knowledge, such as which crops are resistant to drought. From May 26th through the 30th, some AMCOMET officials meet in Harare. They'll consider the draft strategy and set an agenda for a full meeting of the conference in October. Ministers say the goal is to develop a transformational approach to introduce innovative adaptation measures that build the resilience of communities to climate change. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
All roads lead to Atlanta, Georgia in the United States this weekend as Zimbabweans from different states flock to exchange business ideas and network at the 14th edition of the Zim Expo Exposition. Zim Expo Chief Operations Officer Anesu Manjengwa tells us Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye the annual exhibition starts today and ends on Monday.
We have quite a wide range of diverse companies that appeal to different aspects of our communities, even the American people. We have people showcasing books, authors. We have people showcasing fashion. We have people doing jewelry. We have musicians coming from Zimbabwe to perform, and some local musicians here. We have movies that will be shown. We also have legal services, companies showcasing food products. So we really have like a wide range of companies that appeal to different aspects, to different people, or different types of people that come. We actually have tried hard to have a gathering that appeals to different age groups of Zimbabweans and also non-Zimbabweans and their friends, so they can come and benefit on one or two aspects of the whole weekend.
What would you say is going to be the major highlight of this year's Zim Expo?
I think the major highlight of this year's Zim Expo is going to be Miss Zimbabwe, and that's going to be done on Saturday, tomorrow evening, here at the Western Hotel at Atlanta Airport. But I think next to that, we also have a very competitive soccer tournament for the Zim Expo trophy that's going to be held on Sunday at a local park. So they always track and draw different ranges of people. And I think at the soccer tournament, we have about five people who are going to be barbecuing and grilling and serving salsa and matumbi and all those things. So we are expecting a full range of activities this weekend.
What about on the entertainment side? You said you'd actually invited some entertainers from Zimbabwe. Tell us about those.
We actually invited three from Zimbabwe. We invited Tarone Gitaru, who is actually in flight right now. He could be landing any hour right now. Tarone Gitaru, her music is great. We also have Shastro, who actually came into the country last week. He appeals to the younger audience. We also invited Knox, but Knox could not get a visa on Wednesday, so he won't be available for Miss Zimbabwe this year. But he was invited, and we'll make sure that he comes back next year and performs.
That was Zim Expo Chief Operations Officer Anesu Manjengwa speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Atlanta, Georgia.
Just as a reminder, please stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Blessing and Gibbs will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the trouble on the country's roads, that's the police versus commuter bus drivers.
And you can reach us at the following number, 001-202-465-0318, so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Some political commentators say efforts by the MDCT's panel of elders to bring warring factions together look remote as individuals, especially in the